The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Could say broadcasting live from home or, I don't know, a box, just the way it is, this quarantine life. Although I started to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Thank you for the birthday wishes. It is very nice. We have Danny Manning with us on today's show, the former great son. Danny Manning's story, for talk about some of the more interesting events, situations that have happened in all of sports in Arizona. Danny Manning's torn ACL. He comes here for the minimum, basically. Signs for $1 million. There's like a wink and a nod and a handshake with Jerry Colangelo. Danny tears his knee. Jerry shows up, walks in, grabs his hand. Well, I'm going to ask Danny about how that story really went down and the money came and all of that, the business side of sports. Danny Manning comes up at 10:20. John Cantara is going to be with us at 10:35. Those of you that know my San Diego and Southern California roots know Coach Cantara well. Today, the Padres are unveiling Fernando Tatis' contract, and I just don't know how it is San Diego is able to afford all these dollars. And if John were to go position by position, who has the better team? Which player would he take between the Dodgers and the Padres? If you're just to go position by position. So Coach will zoom in with us at 10:35. Our opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. Spurge is with us to start things off. Jordan Spurgeon. What's new with you? Did you cover Lindsey Fry over the weekend? That was the story, I thought.
Yeah, I saw the story a little bit. Didn't get to go out there and cover it. We had people on it, but I saw it a little bit. And backtracking real quick, I didn't know it was your birthday, Brad. Happy birthday.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Right side of the grass. That's all I say. That's all I can say. It's another year, another show. And yeah, thanks. And my birthday present is to talk with you and John. So I have very low standards on my birthday. I'm just kidding. No, so the Lindsey Fry story, didn't you think that was like, of everything that happened over the weekend, like U of A beating UCLA, or USC rather, U of A beating USC in basketball, that was a pretty big story here in our state. But that was about it. I mean, the Suns blew through Memphis and New Orleans like it was nothing. The Coyotes didn't do much over the weekend. But Lindsey Fry skating, what was it, 96 miles, Jordan, yesterday?
Was yeah. The number? I can't even picture how she does 96 miles. I probably, in the shape I'm in, could maybe do 10 if I was lucky. Like, 96 miles on skates, I can't wrap my mind around that. It's crazy how she was able to do that in, what, like 13 and a half hours, I think it was? What it
took she her. Was raising money for Skating for Layton. This will be like, you know, how Pat's Run has turned into a thing. Mm-hmm. Pat's Run's a big deal. Pat's Run this year is April 24th. I would think that Skating for Layton could be something like Pat's Run, something that big, something that we just haven't seen. And but I thought that was cool. What caught your eye over the weekend?
Yeah, that certainly caught my eye. Really, outside of that, I mean, they're just to me, I kind of unplugged a little bit, so I'm still kind of catching up. I spent my morning catching up. Yeah, I got to go out to Palm Springs for a day and just like get out of Arizona for 24 hours and enjoy it. So that was nice. But really, the Suns, I read your article about the Suns and trying to book the playoff tickets. I think that's really where everything's going. It's nice to see that. Now it's good that not only are they beating these teams, but these lower level teams, they're finding ways to beat the breaks off them. And that's what good teams do. Now it's time to not blow leads against teams like the Nets, at least compete in all those games, which is already an upgrade. So just monitoring them and seeing where they go, I think, is really the storyline I'm following right now.
All right, cool. Well, get on out of here. Have a good day. It was Jordan Spurgeon. He's over at Cronkite, ace producer. He worked with John Cantara back in the day in San Diego, which is nice. So appreciate Jordan coming on for a bit. Danny Manning is around the corner. I saw Nomadland over the weekend. It's on Hulu. We're in this space where I see people on social saying, okay, there's no sports it's on. What is it that you're watching? Nomadland was really, really good. I'll just tell you, spend some time, spend an hour and 45 and you'll like it. In terms of like things around the valley, I'm still in the Larry Fitzgerald retirement, not retirement, when will that happen mode. The Diamondbacks report today, the entire squad, and it just feels like we're the Pittsburgh Pirates. You know, we're the Kansas City Royals. We are, it doesn't mean that they can't win. We're the Baltimore Orioles. We're we're just a franchise that's going to go play 162 games. We're going to get Mad Bum his outing so that he can go look around and say, I want to go to that contender on July 15th or July 31st. Like, I just feel like we're a farm system team now. And it doesn't mean that the Padres, just because they spent all this money, that it's automatic that they're going to go win. But with today being the opening day of the entire camp for the Diamondbacks, you can't sit here and say hope springs eternal. Like, this is a team that's going to win 95 games. I don't see that. Like, if they win 85, that would be a miracle in the division that they're in this year. It really would be. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope there's those that say, you know, you brought up this stuff back and you were the hating on that. I'm not hating. I'm just looking at it saying, what are we doing here? Like in the Suns case, as Spurge was saying, in the Suns case, they are now taking teams. Like tonight they have Portland. That's a good team. Damian Lillard's a good player. Happen to think the Suns are deeper. If you beat Portland, their next few games, again, you have Memphis who's not good. You have Minnesota that just fired their coach. And you have the Bulls. You know, those are the games leading up to playing the Lakers a week from tomorrow. And so to me, it's you win these four games, you have all this momentum. Tomorrow, the All-Star reserves are going to be announced. So Devin Booker, Chris Paul, in my opinion, should be All-Star reserves this year. And you have some sexy team notes and storylines that people gravitate towards and say, you know, I want to watch this team. They won the other night by 30. They crushed this team by 20. Oh, they have LeBron tomorrow night. I'm watching. Like, you're going to get people to finally get off the couch or finally turn their attention back to a franchise that's done zero in the last 10 years. So it's fun. All right, Danny Manning, speaking of the Suns, he comes up on the other side, and then John Quintero. I'm Brad Sussmat. As promised, Danny Manning. So I look up, I'm in a sports bar, and I see Danny Manning analyzing college basketball games. I said, oh my gosh, Danny's doing the TV stuff. I would really like to catch up with him. Because, of course, you Suns fans know and Valley fans know the popularity of Danny Manning at a time when the Suns had a lot of stars. And he said, I'm going to come here. He came here. He signed for, like, minimum in this day and age, like next to nothing. It was a lot then. And then he gets hurt. And then he still sticks through it. And it was the glory days of the Suns. And, you know, I see you coach and I see you on television. And it looks like things from a distance are going well for you. I appreciate you coming on. How are things, Danny?
Things are going well. Obviously, I would like to still be a little bit more involved in the game of basketball, but ESPN has been great. They've given me an opportunity to come in and analyze games, and the hosts have been terrific with me, and it's been fun. It's a learning experience. It's something completely new. I actually got a chance to dabble in this line of work when I was with the Suns, when I was injured. I got a chance to go in the studio and visit and spend time with you guys. So for me, it's been eye-opening in terms of the preparation, but it's nothing more for me than one particular game. Instead of opponents, now I have to look at a broader sense of the game of basketball and look at the different leagues and what's going on in those leagues. So I'm enjoying the game of basketball and very fortunate to have this opportunity. And this is the first time that I've ever had a chance to kind of make my own schedule. Yeah. So I'm actually enjoying it to a certain extent.
You can follow Danny over on Twitter, Coach D Manning. He's doing the social media and doing it well. Do you have any itch when you're in the studio or in this day where you're doing it remotely? I'm sure some of it, but do you have any itch at all to say, I want to get back on the sideline?
You know what my itch is? My itch is to teach. My itch is to be on the court, to be in the locker room, to have that interaction. That's what I miss the most. Obviously, the competition and the games are always fun to be a part of and special. But at my core, I want to share the knowledge that I have, the passion that I have that so many people share with me and help me along the way. So, you know, that's where my itch lies, is getting back out and teaching.
You are in Kansas today, and you're safe. Weather is bad, I'm sure, but are you guys good?
Yeah, we're very fortunate. Yeah, we're okay. The weather is we've got some snow on the ground. It's been rather cold for a while, but we're making it, so we can't complain.
There you go. Danny Manning with us. Your time with the Suns, if you were to just do a snapshot description, what would you say about your time in Phoenix?
my time in Phoenix helped me grow as a young man. It was a very fun time in my life, or in all of our lives. And I say that from my family's perspective. My wife had a good base of friends there. The wives with the sons were in the organization, had a good relationship. My children started school there. And so everybody was very comfortable in Phoenix. And it's somewhere like for me, that was my first place that I got to pick where I wanted to play as a free agent. Mm-hmm. And as we know, Jerry Colangelo was running the team then. And he's one of the biggest reasons that I signed there because of his commitment to his team, his commitment to the community and the area of Phoenix. And I don't regret it. And it's something that I had some hardships, you know, I had two ACLs, but also had some good times, you know, being sixth man of the year and playing with the different teammates that I played for and different coaches and the different people in the community that I got a chance to build relationships and friendships with that I still have to this day. So very fortunate to have that opportunity. And I feel very special to have those experiences. And I enjoyed my time in Phoenix, and I always enjoy getting back and visiting and spending time there.
You know, the story goes of when you decide to come here, because you went from the Clippers to Atlanta, you get your opportunity to be a free agent. You sign, as I said earlier, for a very small amount back then, a large amount of money. It was $1 million, but you still left money on the table, and people spoke about, wow, there must be something going on. You do get injured. The story about Jerry saying to you, don't worry about, you know, you being injured. Take me through that story in that time when you were injured and you were playing here for a small amount and not for a long term.
Well, we were practicing at the time, American Airlines Arena on the practice court. And I got hurt. We were on a fast break situation, and I tried to push the ball up and get my shoulders past one of my teammates and blew my knee out. I got carried up to the training room, and that whole time in my mind, I'm saying, I signed a one-year deal. That's all I'm saying in my mind. So I get into the training room, and the guys, the team is around me, and they're, you're going to be okay. You know, hang in there. And, you know, I start hearing that. Then all of a sudden, you know, I kind of close my eyes and I still hear it, and I hear it, and it just got quiet and kind of an eerie feeling. Hmm. And it was kind of, then all of a sudden I felt like I was cold sitting on the trainer's table. And then I looked up and nobody was around me. And then Jerry appears. It was like it was a dream. Hmm. Jerry just appeared and goes, I won't forget about the commitment you made to us. Mm. You know, and at that point in time, you know, I'm still saying in my mind, I signed a one-year deal. And, you know, go through the surgery, go through the rehab, get to training camp the following year, and I'm starting to get back out on the court. I go up to training camp and work out for a day. And then Jerry and my agent, Ron Grinker at the time, come up with a deal. So to me, like, Jerry Colangelo, without question, is the best owner I've ever played for. Mm. And, you know, the way he took care of me and so many other players that played in his organization, and still to this day that he does, something I'm very fortunate for. So, you know, I'm glad I made the decision, obviously, to play for the Suns, because if that would have happened with another team, who knows the situation that I would have been in. So that was my son's first ACL. And my second ACL was, we were playing, I want to say we were in Sacramento towards the end of the season, and tried to make a cut down the lane and blew my knee out. And at that point in time, this was my third time, and I knew what I had done. I'd had that sensation in my knee so many times. And I remember sitting on the trainer's table, and Prosky, our trainer, was like, oh, you're going to be okay. You know, Prosky was always full of energy, full of life, very positive. And I'm like, Prosky, I tore my ACL, my man. I'm sorry. It's just, give me a beer. We can sit here. We can talk and laugh right now. But I know what the situation is now. And so being able to come back from those injuries with the blessing of the Phoenix Suns staff, the medical staff, all the doctors, Robin Powell, the strength and conditioning coach, my personal coach was Carl Horn. And those guys did a tremendous job of putting me back together, along with Dr. Lombardo from Curling and Job in L.A. So very fortunate to come back from those injuries, but feel like I put a little work in to make it happen as well.
It's funny because I'll turn this on me for a second. At the same time, I had two torn ACLs, yeah. and Dr. Emerson had to put me back together, as we like to say. Mm-hmm. And so I would see you and go through the rehab at the end of the table, and that sensation, as you say, and I tore mine on the practice court too, and I didn't get it was no Joe Klein getting in the way or stepping on my foot, but I tore mine during Super Bowl week, and Joe Theismann, who of course, remember his leg got
yes.
behind his neck. Joe Theismann was in town. He was on the court when I tore mine, and I'm standing there screaming in pain saying, "Not the rehab, not the rehab." I look up and there's Joe Theismann. I said, "I got nothing on you."
So, yes.
You know, so to your point, Danny, on this, it's the, when you're in that moment, it is that burning arrow through the knee, and it's just like, not this again. The mental grind is, it's hard to describe. And you're in this space where you're a high-end athlete playing the highest level of basketball around the world. So I couldn't imagine the rehab and the mental toll on you.
Yeah, it was different. You know, for me, the very first time I tore my ACL was my rookie year in the NBA, and Bernard King was in the midst of a comeback from his ACL. And so I pulled inspiration from him. I pulled a lot of inspiration from a college teammate, Archie Marshall, who blew his knee out two times while we were in college at Kansas. Mm. And I knew it was possible to come back. What I didn't know was, would I be able to jump as high, run as fast, cut as quick, have the same mobility as before the surgery? But in the back of my mind, it was like, you know what? I'm still 6'10". So if nothing else, I can come just a straight post guy and gain some weight and bang some people around. So, you know, for me, being able to come back from that injury and still have a little bit of the type of mobility that I wanted to be able to be a versatile basketball player is something that I feel very fortunate to have done. And then playing for coaches that I played for with the Suns organization to allow me to play in their system and adapt some things to give me a chance to be a contributor was something I was always thankful for also.
How did Paul Westphal, who just recently passed, how did he impact your career?
Westy was, he was just brutally honest in a non-threatening, in a humorous type of way with different things that he would say to you. Hmm. It was almost like, I mean, he was a teammate or a bigger brother, big brother, who's just giving you the advice of, hey, let's do this. You need to do this, or look at doing this. When I was in this situation, do this. And, you know, a lot of things that I use as a coach came from the kind of the philosophy and mindset of Westy and his communication patterns with his teams and with us when we were there. And so for me, Westy was someone that was creative, outside of the box, did a lot of unique things that took advantage of different skill sets. You know, I remember, you know, we have Charles Barkley and Kevin Johnson, two perennial all-stars on the team. And he's telling me, all right, I want you to initiate offense. And I'm like, ooh, okay. And, you know, Charles is on one side of the floor. KJ's on the other side of the floor. Marley's on one side. AC's on one side. And he's just like, whatever side you go to, it doesn't matter. You got Chuck on one side and you got KJ on the other. It'll work out. And so, you know, I enjoyed that type of mindset and mentality playing with him. So he was somebody that was a genius. And I also just loved the person that he was. I mean, you could go sit in his office and visit with him and talk about anything outside of basketball as well.
Before I get you out of here, that group of players, how was it that it worked? I know there wasn't a championship, and some people always go back to, well, they didn't win a title, but they played a style. Your team played a style and a brand that was exciting and fun to watch. And yet you had personalities like Charles, everybody talks about, and Charles and Kevin. And how was it that it worked so well, even though there was not a title? And were there bumpy spots? Were there rough patches?
Well, in every team you play on, you're going to have some rough patches. But I think what made that team special were the guys that we had around Charles and we had around KJ. We knew that those two guys were tremendously talented and deserved a lot of attention on the court and made the game easier for all of us because of their talent level. But I think you look at the guys that the surrounding cast, if you will, Dan Marley, AC Green, you know, Wayman Tisdale, Elliot Perry, I mean, Danny Shays. I mean, we had guys that were pros that understood and also knew that we're going to have opportunities to do what we need to do to help our team be successful. But it all keys off of these two guys. And so everybody else was just the type of people that we were, the type of players that we were. We were unselfish enough in our minds and in our actions to do whatever we needed to do to help that team win. And that made it fun. You know, every night it was somebody different outside of Charles and outside of KJ that had a big contribution. And I think a lot of it too, at one point, Marley and I were starters, and then we started coming in off the bench, and that helped the rotation as well. And, you know, that gave our second unit a little bit more pop. So we were all unselfish, and we bought into what we were trying to do was win a championship. And that was, you know, my first year in Phoenix, I definitely thought we had a chance to do that.
Danny Manning with us. Before I get you out of here, I'll put your college basketball analyst ESPN insider hat on. Out here, Bobby Hurley's team has really, really struggled with COVID and injuries. And Sean Miller's team in Tucson is playing well. What in Grand Canyon with Bryce Drew is having a very good season. They're in a spot where I think they could finally break through and beat New Mexico State and make it to the tournament. Have you seen enough out here in the West of these three schools? And what do you make out of just what's going on in Arizona college basketball?
Yes, I have. I'll start with Grand Canyon. I think Drew's gone out and done a tremendous job. I think when Marley took over or started running that program, he brought some notoriety to it. He brought some attention to it in the recruiting aspect and realm. And I think Drew's come in and continued that. Obviously, they're having a very good year. They've got some transfers in. I think his best player was a transfer from Wichita State, from what I can remember, who's shooting the ball at a high clip and being very efficient for their team. And they definitely have a chance to, break through this year, as you said. Arizona State, I think those guys have been hit with injuries as of late and definitely the COVID bug. I think, you know, Hurley's doing a tremendous job. I love his passion. I love his energy when he's out there on the court. And he's always had that as a player. And, you know, he's got some talented freshmen. Bagley's talented. Mm-hmm. You know, Christopher is talented. They're probably only going to be there for this year.
That's right.
Those guys are talented, and they've gone through some injuries and some COVID bugs. And Remy's very talented, and he's gone through his hardships this year with the different losses that he's experienced on the personal side. So I think they still have a run left in them, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go for a deep run in their conference tournament. Arizona, you know, Sean has a very talented team. And those guys are really good. Tubelis is somebody that I've been really impressed with, being able to be as versatile as he is and have an impact. And he doesn't do it forcing the issue. He just lets the game come to him. So, you know, Arizona basketball is thriving and college basketball is thriving. I enjoy watching.
It's good to see you. Stay safe. Stay well. Thanks for getting caught up, Danny.
Thank you very much. Take care and have a great day.
There's Danny Manning with us, and we're back with more after this timeout. The coach, the legend, a good friend, a great friend, actually, John Quintero is with us from San Diego because today the Padres are doing this press conference around Fernando Tatis and the third highest paid player in the history of baseball. Now, growing up in San Diego, for me to see the Padres have a payroll approaching $200 million is stunning. So I want to have Coach on for a few minutes. And John at 97.3 The Fan covers all things around the Padres on his daily show that you can hear in the middle of the days. It's good to see you, my friend. Are you stunned, shocked? What is the best way to describe what is going on with the Padres? Because they are the national buzz of baseball, John.
Well, not only are they the national buzz of baseball, and great to be with you, Brad. By the way, for all your listeners out there, very happy birthday to you today as well. But it's been an incredible offseason. And to be honest with you, I really thought, from what I know about the way this game works and with agents and that, I thought that this deal probably, from Tatis's side, wouldn't get consummated until next year. Once the fans get back in the stands, they get the new collective bargaining agreement in place. But the Padres have had a great relationship with this kid since they traded James Shields to the White Sox when Fernando was a young minor league player and he came over. And A.J. Preller's really, you know, worked that relationship a great deal. And Dan Lozano, who, by the way, is also Manny Machado's agent, you know, obviously has worked with the Padres in the past. And so the Padres, you know, they decided, hey, you know, we're going to make an effort. We're going to try to get this thing done before the start of the year. And you know, they're getting it done. And I think it's definitely, when you look at it, it's the most years ever signed by a major league player, which is amazing. I mean, historic move by the Padres. Now, you look at the salary, we understand it's going to be $340 million. Of course, we don't know the exact numbers, but that's what we're hearing right now, 14 years, $340 million. It sounds mind-boggling, but when you watch this kid play day in and day out, now, mind you, he's only played 133 major league games. He's incredible. And I sit up in the press box back in 2019, his rookie year. Last year, I only got to go to one game because of the pandemic. I sit and watch him night and night after night on TV, and I just giggle at the talent this kid has. He's amazing.
Okay, so there's a lot there to unpack. When you pay Machado, your jaw dropped, probably. Like, wow, they're going in on somebody. Now they do this. How can they afford to do this in San Diego? They just had a change in ownership structure in the last, five months, something like that. So how right. can they afford to do this, John?
Well, you know, Brad, I would even go back the year before they signed Machado, when they signed Eric Hosmer to an 8-year, $144 million deal. And, you know, I don't know if they're ever going to have buyer's remorse on that one or not. Hosmer's been okay. He hasn't been, you know, at the level he was in Kansas City, but him and Machado are buddies and they seem to play well. And they had a good year last year. Let's see if they can do it for 162. Machado, a rough first year, even though he did hit 32 home runs and 85 RBIs. Everybody was talking about, oh man, he had a bad year. He had a bad year. He came back last year, finished third in the most valuable player. So now they're going to go after Tatis, who really, let's face it, Brad, he's already slowly becoming the face of Major League Baseball. And again, I go back to, he's played 143 games. You ask about the money. That's a very good question. I mean, Ron Fowler, who was in there running the day-to-day operation, along with AJ Preller as the general manager. Ron, you know, one of the owners, and he was the day-to-day guy. And Peter Seidler has now taken over. A man who's a great man, by the way, Brad. I hope you get to meet him someday. He's an incredible man. He's had a lot of health problems. He's a two-time cancer survivor, but now that he's healthy, he wanted to get into the day-to-day operation. And ever since he's gotten in there, it seems like the Padres are spending a lot of money. You know, they signed Ha-Seon Kim, a young man from Korea, to go along with what they have. And we don't even know if he's going to be able to beat out Jake Cronenworth, who was in the running for the Rookie of the Year last year. But the Padre infield, with this signing of Tatis, with Hosmer, Ha-Seon Kim, Tatis, and Manny Machado, that Padre infield invested $812 million into those four ballplayers. Amazing.
That is stunning. I mean, that's really surprising. Okay, so is Seidler the type of owner that when they drop 10 of 12, that he comes down the hall and says, what are we doing here? Is he the type of owner, because you know how it works in baseball, and the pitching, we'll get to that in a minute. It's not likely the Padres are going to drop 10 of 12, but if they go into a slumber, they go into a skid, they're 11 and 14 through 25 games, is he the type of guy that would get involved and mess with things?
Absolutely not. You know, I met with Peter Seidler prior to him hiring AJ Preller. I like to tell this story, Brad, because you know how much I've always been into baseball and love baseball. And he called me up one day and said, hey, John, could I meet with you for I got some questions for you. We met at this Chili's restaurant here in Mira Mesa. And, you know, he asked me about what I thought about the organization. And I told him a few things. And I said, the number one thing is, you know, this organization needs to be held more accountable. You need to hire people, let them work, but they need to be held accountable. And the players need to be held accountable. And, you know, he was pretty far down the road in hiring AJ Preller at that point in time. And he hired him within about 7 to 10 days after our meeting. But most of the things that we talked about that day, Brad, were building a farm system and being able to put together an organization that's not going to win every 5 years, but could win, you know, maybe be in the playoffs 4 out of 5 years or 6 out of 8 years. And, you know, I'm sitting here now remembering that conversation, you know, sitting there sipping on my iced tea before AJ got hired. And I'm seeing a lot of the things that Mr. Seidler talked about are starting to unfold right in front of me right now.
That's good stuff. John Quintero with us for a few minutes. You can hear John on the radio at 97.3. You can hear him in the middle of the days. He has his social media. You can follow him there as well. Great insight here with the Padres. All right, so the starting rotation, they just keep adding. So is the Tatis contract, it sounds to me like you knew that this was coming, if this was a year ago in the makings. So are the pieces in the starting rotation a bigger surprise to you than what Tatis is signing today?
Well, this whole offseason has been kind of overwhelming, to be honest with you. I mean, it's been, you know, for a midday talk show host, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, it seemed like every week they were doing something. You know, I went on right after the World Series, and I'll get to the answer on that. I would say this. I didn't think they'd get Darvish. I thought they could get Snell. But as far as Tatis, I really thought he'd probably sign after the 2021 season because he'd be going into year one of his arbitration. But I got to tell you this, Brad. You know, when the World Series was over, you know, I gave it a little bit of breathing room. But the following Monday, I think the World Series was over on a Tuesday or Wednesday. The following Monday, I came on and I started yelling and screaming about how the Padres needed to go get Blake Snell. I thought he'd be affordable. I looked at his contract. You know, it was definitely money-wise for a good young left-handed pitcher. It was very affordable. I went on a tirade about that for several weeks. All of a sudden, they bring in Blake Snell. I had no idea they were going to go get Yu Darvish. Little did I know that they were going to go out and, you know, make that trade for Joe Musgrove, a hometown product from Grossmont High School. But I will tell you this. I did talk about Musgrove the same week that I talked about Blake Snell. And so I was feeling pretty good about some of the names I was throwing out because they got two of them.
Well, and people that don't know, John, you dabbled in the agency business. So you know the contracts and the structure of it. This is not just some guy sitting behind a microphone with all the answers. You did your homework on it. And so the answer to that starting rotation question, what is it? Bigger surprise, Tatis's contract or what their rotation stacks up like now?
I think you probably got to go with the rotation because there are so many different parts that played a part in it. I mean, right now, you know, they haven't laid out who the opening day starter is going to be, but you got Yu Darvish, who was in the running for the National League Cy Young, and has really the last year and a half pitched as well as anybody in baseball after, you know, really kind of slipping there a little bit at the end of his tenure with the Dodgers and early on with the Cubs. They got Blake Snell. They got Denelson Lamet, who I put a question mark next to him for a couple of different reasons. Brad, he wasn't able to finish last year. He had a great year. He made second team all MLB, but he had a biceps injury. And not only that, he's had Tommy John surgery. He's never made more than 21 starts in a major league season. So, you know, he's got to kind of go out there and prove it. When he's on his game, he's fantastic. Then you got Joe Musgrove, and then you got Chris Paddock, who had a great 2019. And for me, a poor 2020. I think he'll probably get back on the beam this year, but he was the opening day starter a year ago. And right now he's slotted in to be their number five.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question that you could go a couple different ways. I don't want you to step on any landmines here because you are in San Diego. If you line up the Dodgers nine, or let's just go eight, and the Padres every day eight, how many Padres do you take over Dodgers?
Well, I'll be honest with you. You got to take the left side of the infield. I realized that Corey Seager was the World Series most valuable player and the NLCS most valuable player. But I think you got to take Tatis because Tatis can beat you in a variety of different ways. Not only can he beat you on the defensive side, he can steal a base. I mean, he can steal second. Next thing you know, he's stealing third and he's scoring on a ball hit behind second base. I mean, he's that type of guy. Machado, you know, Justin Turner's a great clutch hitter, a great catalyst, but Machado can turn a ball game around in a hurry with hitting that ball out of the ballpark. And I think at second base, that's a tough one because I guess Chris Taylor will probably be there. If it's Gavin Lux, I think the Padres may have a little bit more of an edge there because he hasn't really proved himself at the big league level. I'd say second base is probably even. Muncy had a bad year last year. Hosmer had a good year. But Muncy's also a guy that had back-to-back 35 home run years. I'd probably have to take Muncy over there. The outfield, I got to give it to the Dodgers. I mean, Mookie Betts, Will Myers. Will Myers is a good major league player, had a really nice year last year. Trent Grisham won a gold glove in center field, but I got to go with Bellinger in left field. Tommy Pham coming off a bad year. I got to go with A.J. Pollock behind the plate. You know, Austin Nola did a really nice job for the Padres. Didn't hit as well as you would have liked after he came over from Seattle. But you got to go with Will Smith. Will Smith not only can do it on the defensive end, but, you know, he can put the ball out of the ballpark. So, you know, I got to give the Dodgers a nod. Probably three out of four in the infield, all three outfield spots behind the plate. Dodgers are tough. And the other thing, Brad, that we haven't won anything yet here in San Diego. We got to the playoffs last year, but we haven't won anything. It was a 60-game season. We've seen the Dodgers, and I know they only played 60 games last year, but we've also seen them the prior 7 years where they played 162, and we know what the majority of those guys can do over 162. And let's also remember, they've been to three out of the last four World Series, and if Houston doesn't cheat and Boston doesn't cheat a little bit, who knows? They may have been the three-time world champion over the last 4 years. So, hey, you got to beat the champ. That Dodger ball club, one of the better ball clubs you're going to ever see.
But the gap has closed considerably.
Well, hey, you know what? Momentum is tomorrow, the next day's pitcher. And you know what? You get into a series with the Dodgers, Padres can go man for man, and the Padres got a good bullpen. They got 16 guys going for eight spots. The Dodgers had the best bullpen in baseball last year. But at the end of the day, hey, that's why we're excited about hopefully being able to play 162 games. I got to tell you, Brad, I know you and the family will come back for a little time at some point this summer. I mean, people have Padre fever in this town. It's like it used to be when the Chargers were on fire.
Yeah, there's no fever over here. There's no fever. There's no fever at all. This organization is going to be looking up for years and years to come, because I just don't see the Diamondbacks or the Dodgers or the Giants pushing either the Padres or Dodgers. They just don't see it. And they just are, what has happened in San Diego has pushed things so much further ahead of where the Diamondbacks are sitting right now. They'll be happy to win 80 games and come on out to, you know, t-shirt night or whatever. And that's it. You know, start looking ahead to football season.
I just hope we get out to t-shirt night this year.
That's right. It's John Quintero with us. John, good stuff. Thanks.
All right, Brad, thanks for having me.
And we're back with more after this timeout.